remember walking around a woodland somewhere in Oxfordshire with Vicentra, being extremely distressed, and him saying, this is a fruit of your practice. Thanks a lot, guy. Recognizing things for what they are. Well, that does take people with more experience in a way. This is where a teacher can be very useful to us. We can sort of hold our hand through those periods when we feel rattled. We can't help but misunderstand the teachings and our teachers. Yeah, we're not enlightened. So when the time comes, we have to be careful not to, you know, blame the Dharma or blame the teacher. I think this is very, in a way, this is where I think there are whole areas here that could be very usefully unpacked by the Western Buddhist Order, some of the responses we've been having in the past few years. Similarly, we can't blame ourselves either. There isn't any place for blame in Dharma practice. Yeah? Blame is just not something that fits into Dharma practice at all. Responsibility does, blame doesn't. This process of reconstruction is an essential part of Dharma practice. Yeah? I think you can see it in relation to the three fetters, yeah? The first three fetters, that the breaking of which equates to stream entry, to insight, big eye insight. Yeah? It's just a continual process of dissolving our self-view. Yeah? We've always got a view of ourselves, understandably. We have to just keep taking it apart, keep thinning it out, making it less rigid, more fluid. We've got to move to deeper and fuller understandings of the Dharma and of Dharma practice. Yeah? We've got to move beyond just rites and rituals as ends in themselves. We've got to really deepen our comprehension of what it means to practice and how to practice, you know, how practice expresses itself. Don't get just lost in the forms. And if we do this, then we'll deepen our confidence in the Dharma, yeah? And our confidence in the Buddha and the Sangha. Yeah? We'll move beyond the fetter of doubt. Well, we've got to remember if you'll excuse the pun, the path metaphor will only take us so far. Yeah? For most of us, Dharma practice isn't linear. Yeah? It doesn't go from A to B. There's a continual process of starting again. And it's this process of starting again, I think, is reflected in a lot of the life stories of Tibetan teachers, actually. I think it's also reflected in the things like the principle of beginner's mind in the Zen tradition, yeah, this sense of being fresh to it again and again. So I mentioned Naropa earlier on, who was Marpa's teacher. I think that in his biography there's an absolute classic case of this whole business of having to start again. And this story is very beautifully told in Vicentra's book, Tales of Freedom. I think it's called something like Words and Meaning in the Life of Naropa. So Naropa was the abbot of Nalanda. So Nalanda was the big Buddhist university. We visited, those of us who were on the pilgrimage earlier in the year visited it. It's difficult to get your head around this whole sort of campus that was completely full of Buddhists. And Nalanda was the top dog here, yeah? So it's kind of as high as you can get in the kind of in the Buddhist hierarchy, in terms of, you know, if you want to be a career Buddhist, Abbot of Nalanda is having made it completely. And what happens is that, having sort of reached the pinnacle of career Buddhism, Naropa is visited by a Dakini. And this Dakini communicates with him in a very strong way that actually career Buddhism is not the thing, guy. You've really got to get on with your practice. You've got to see a whole new level of practice if you're going to gain insight, if you're going to really understand the essence of the teachings. And so Naropa takes this seriously. He leaves his position, goes forth to become, from Nalanda, to become a wandering practitioner. He finds a teacher himself. And eventually, as a wandering practitioner, as a tantric practitioner, he does deepen his understanding and gains enlightenment. So this story of a kind of going forth, of sort of, you know, reaching a point and then you have to go out from the structure that you've set up for yourself and do something different, is very common in Buddhist hagiography, stories of Buddhist saints, particularly in the Tibetan tradition. Yeah? So you'll find that in, particularly in the Mahasiddhas, those 84 mysterious tantric characters, you'll find this aspect in their biographies again and again. And I had a little realisation about this. I was having tea, I was having lunch with Suchimani in the clock tower, and I had this little realisation about this, because I'd been thinking about this in relation to my own life, this whole business of kind of, well, what do you do when a structure doesn't seem to fit you anymore? And what I realised is that, like all symbolic stories, although this happens once, perhaps, in the biography of Naropa, it's not something that just happens once in our lives, in our practices. It's a continual process that we need to keep going on with, yeah? It's a continual process of kind of... Well, it's there in the symbolism of going forth, in the Buddha's life, isn't it? It's the way the Buddha goes forth from the palace to the wandering life, yeah? The way he leaves each of the teachers that he finds when he's got to the end of the track with them. He understands there's further to go, yeah? The way he gave up the ascetic practices when he realised quite literally that it was going to be a dead end. So we need to do this. We need to keep up this principle of going forth. Yeah? We need to keep tearing down the towers. We need to keep our practices fresh. We need to keep starting our practice anew in a way. We need to have this practice of beginner's mind. It's only if we do that that we're going to be able to sing along with Milarepa. And so I'm going to finish by singing you the Song of a Yogi's Joy, which is his delight at the complexity of life and practice, really. I'm not going to sing it. Obeisance to you, my guru. I met you through having accumulated great merits, and now stay at the place you prophesied. This is a delightful place, a place of hills and forests. In the mountain meadows, flowers bloom. In the woods, dance the swaying trees. For monkeys, it's a playground. Birds sing tunefully. Bees fly and buzz. And from day until night, the rainbows come and go. In summer and winter falls the sweet rain, and mist and fog roll up in fall and spring. At such a pleasant place, in solitude, I, Milarepa, happily abide, meditating on the void illuminating mind. Oh, happy are the myriad manifestations. The more ups and downs, the more joy I feel. Happy is the body with no sinful karma. Happy indeed are the countless confusions. The greater the fear, the greater the happiness I feel. Oh, happy is the death of sensations and passions. The greater the distress and passions, the more can one be blithe and gay. What happiness to feel no ailment or illness. What happiness to feel that joy and suffering are one. What happiness to play in bodily movement with the power aroused by yoga. To jump and run, to dance and leap is more joyful still. What happiness to sing the victorious song. What happiness to chant and hum. More joyful still to talk and loudly sing. Happy is the mind, powerful and confident, steeped in the realm of totality. The most extreme happiness is the self-emanation of self-power. Happy are the myriad forms, the myriad revelations. As a welcoming gift to my faithful pupils, I sing of yogic happiness.